Hello and welcome to Ruby's Guide to Publishing podcast. Did I get that right?
And
this is Joe Beal.
This is the People's Guide to Publishing. I am your host, Joe Beal, the autistic publisher and author of A People's Guide to Publishing.
And I'm Ellie Blue. I'm the marketing and editorial director of Microcosm, but this week I am really all inventory all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Not my job, but I love it.
And this is Ruby Red, very intent on licking.
Mm-hmm. So this episode, we're going to talk about one of the first books Microcosm published
mm-hmm.
back 20 years ago
mm-hmm.
or more.
So once upon a time, this book, Making Stuff and Doing Things, DIY Guides to Just About Everything, geez, I don't even know the title, was a different sort of publication. It was called How, and the number 2. And those were very popular, and when the author finished How To Number 2, we were like, okay, this is getting clunky. We should consolidate these into one guide that is one book, and I think originally this was 288 pages, and then we edited it down for the 2017 edition to 256 pages. So that happened.
Can you tell us a little bit about the book? What's in it? What's it like?
So, How To, now, Making Stuff and Doing Things, was a collection of reader-sourced information that drew upon a once-upon-a-time publisher and, I guess you would say, even competitor called Tree of Knowledge, which was really more of a collaborator, and who had been collecting these DIY articles about how to do various things in your life. Many of them were handwritten, and they had never published their book for whatever reason. I think they felt that it was like they wanted to be something encyclopedic, whereas we, as an imperfectionist operation, we were like, let's have at it.
Can I read some of the things that are in the book?
It sounds like you're about to.
Only with your consent.
We'll see.
So you can learn how to play guitar, how to make a bikini out of bandanas, how to make a candle, how to hook a rug, how to juggle, how to make a bowl out of an old vinyl record, how to make a rubbing alcohol camp stove, how to compost, How to Pee Standing Up for Ladies by Anonymous, Folk Remedies, Hot Sauce Shaker, How to Make a Stove, How to Do Basic Electrical Wiring, How to Fix Your Car. There's a lot of stuff in here. There's like kind of no area of life it doesn't cover. Mm-hmm. I would call it encyclopedic. Maybe not complete, but
right.
Wide-ranging.
Near encyclopedic, yeah. This book was like sort of went on to define Microcosm, particularly in its early incarnation, as like our interest in skill building and really teaching people how to change their life and the world around them.
So what year was Making Stuff and Doing Things first published?
In this volume, I think it was 2002 okay. that we originally published it, maybe 2003. There's, of course, no reference to the original zines in here. You know, so essentially this has had many volumes and editions. It's a truly fascinating project in so many ways because it you know, there's traditionally published books that contain content like this, even, like, handwritten sort of content in this vein and, you know, the feel of the 1970s. But you know, this one was a bit different because it was really community-sourced, meaning that original editor John Gerken, now owner of Gerken's Psychology in New Orleans, really was, like, a member of the community and really did a good job of saying, like, hey, I want you to, like, share all the skills that you have. You know, at that time, 1999, you know, 3,000 copies was, like, a lot of copies of something. You know, it felt that way anyway. most of our projects, like most of the print runs, were in hundreds, you know. Like many projects, you know, this immediately exhausted itself. Like, we sold out of those first 3,000 within 2 months, you know. And we had no distributor at the time, I think is notable. We had lots of people apparently paying attention to what we had going on in our website and, like, keeping tabs on us. And, you know, just sort of invested in who we were and what we did.
Were the contributors also promoting it? Was that part of it?
I don't know. I mean, in theory. I mean, you know, this
Maybe not.
Before most people were using the internet socially. Mm-hmm. You know, so you have to, like, think about it that way. Like, people were probably saying, like, oh, this thing that I wrote about how to make toothpaste out of nothing is, like, in this book, a real thing in this book. And, you know, like, they were probably enthusiastic about that. And I guess it's that thing, too, where, like, people, you know, like, people had strong feelings around this kind of, like, what do you even call that? Like, folk knowledge, mm-hmm. you know, all the way around. And so some people, like, felt very privatized about it. And, you know, that also, like, sort of helps people to, like, develop investment in it. You know, and to talk about it and for other people then to hear about
it.
You
know,
when I told some other publishers that, like, we had published, you know, 3,000 copies and sold every single copy within a few months just by, like, putting it on our website and, like, you know, there were some store orders, but for the most part it was people buying one copy at a time. You know, just really being like, oh, that looks interesting, or I've been waiting for this to come out, or whatever. There are still, to this day, web programmer Nate Beatty was really smart at using the, like, features of, like, if you're interested in this, then you might also be interested in this, which, like, is a feature we still use that presumably, seemingly, leads people to find other things on our website that they're interested in, especially as there's, like, much more on our website than there was in, you know, 2002 when this book came out. There's this sort of idea in publishing that if you get a distributor or have a distributor that will create interest in sales and marketing in your company. And that isn't really how publishing works, you know? Like, that essentially is really good for making money for shipping companies. Not then so much, but nowadays when you have a distributor contract, you pay a portion of the invoice to your distributor, and then you pay a fee for returns. So it's kind of the thing where, like, they can make money through, like, warehousing sales and returns, even if they never sell anything, you know, which is kind of a fascinating, weird alternate vortex. But when you think about it, you really need to have that kind of, like, organic interest in what you do, you know? And I think partly, like, I know for sure in 1999 and probably not really until 2006 were our books on Amazon, you know? And I think partly that is why we sold so many of these from the get-go. It was like, our website was the one-stop shop to buy it, you know? And that worked really, really well. Still works really, really well, just a little bit different now. But so imagine our shock a few months ago.
Maybe a month and a half ago, 2 months ago.
Yeah, it was into the tail end of October mm-hmm. when somebody on Tumblr wrote, like, a fairly tepid review of this book,
Making Stuff and Doing Things,
and had a really low quality photo of them holding the book and talking about how they, like, go back and pick it up and revisit it periodically. And then somebody who is presumably famous on Tumblr picked it up and reblogged it, reposted, retumbled, whatever your vernacular of choice is, it. And that must have been in late October, because we then went from having a 2-year supply of Making Stuff and Doing Things in our warehouse to now we're down to a matter of days of supply in just a month and a half. So there were definitely days where we sold hundreds of copies, again, mostly one at a time. And there were days where, you know, we sold dozens of copies, you know, what have you. So it was fascinating because, you know, this content is 20 years old.
But you know? It's timeless. Like, the technology for making a bowl out of your used vinyl record does not change.
Mm-hmm. And so that's part of it. And part of it, you know, it goes in, so it taps, like, all those sort of what I think of as the important buttons in your publishing skills toolbox. So you want your content to be evergreen. Like, there's nothing, obviously the acknowledge of iPhones is not mentioned in this book because they didn't exist. But to the audience of this book, the existence and invention of the iPhone is completely irrelevant. It's like, who cares? Like, I am going to be over here figuring out how to, like, unstink my socks in the wilderness with my homemade toothpaste and my, like, camp stove that I made from the stuff that I got at the gas station. And that is, like, for everybody that isn't living that lifestyle, it's sort of a window into, like, what their lifestyle could be that sort of gives them hope from, like, a bleak, boring existence, if I may.
I mean, as our tagline says, never be bored again.
Mm-hmm. And indeed. And so, you know, it's fascinating that things like this keep on giving and giving, you know, and we have a number of other books where we've done that. Make Your Place had a similar moment with where a mom blog that no longer exists called Angry Chicken wrote about the book, and it just, like, exploded all over the internet. And then, you know, places like Boing Boing and, like, more established blogs had to write, you know, like, in-depth, you know, product testing and, you know, reviews and things like that. And so that went on to sell tens of thousands of copies, like, almost a year after the book had come out, you know. And so when you think about, like, traditional book marketing, book publicity, it's, like, all about that initial, you know, you're building, like, an upsurge because you suspect that you'll flatline and then you'll downplane and, you know, you'll hit a valley of selling two copies a year eventually. Whereas if you build your content to be timeless, you will not have this problem because it will always have, like, an important, like, emotional resonance in people's hearts, and it will always have relevance in terms of, like, what the emotional payoff is to the reader.
This whole resurgence of sales and making stuff and doing things, our 20, almost 20-year-old book in the last 2 months, I guess it is 20 years old if you count previous editions.
Mm-hmm.
We did nothing.
Yeah,
we did nothing to produce that. Like, we were like, oh, maybe we should go on Tumblr and engage with this, and our publicist, Lydia, who's very smart, was like, no, that will kill it. Like, people on Tumblr, just like people who like the Making Stuff and Doing Things book, they want to be below the radar. They don't want to be, like, engaging with the giant corporation they may assume that we are, or with the man, or whatever. Like, they want to share the thing they discovered.
I mean, I get many inquiries about this book that they're like, I live in Germany, how do I get the book? Is there a German edition, etc.? And it's fascinating because not one of them mentions, like, how they found out about it, or that there's, you know, like, to them, this is not a sales spike. This is just them being like, oh, I'm interested in this thing.
I was thinking about Bicycle Race also.
Mm-hmm. Similar. Mm-hmm.
So we had a book come out a year ago?
Two years ago? A little more.
About a year and a half ago, called Bicycle/Race by Adonia Lugo. Very smart book about the current state of the bicycle transportation industry and the sort of, like, how to get out from under its biggest problem, which is racism. And Adonia is very, like, well-known in that world, and the book is very good, and we're a good publisher for it because we have expertise in that, and that book sold enough individual copies, just to, like, one at a time, or sometimes 10 at a time, to individual readers, that it paid for itself that way. It paid off all its costs before its publication date.
Like, months before.
Yeah, and it's like, when that, sometimes that happens with, like, big sales through the distributor, or institutional sales, but you can't really trust those sales, because
they're, like, returnable.
Yeah, a lot of that stuff's going to be returned. But these, you know, sales to individual people, they're not going to return it. It's done for good. And Joe was like, this hasn't happened since Making Stuff and Doing Things.
Mm-hmm.
Since 2002. So, we basically had that happen twice.
And, I mean, it has happened to other degree, but not without, like, a key piece of publicity.
Right.
You know, or, like, a key write-up somewhere. And maybe that happened for Bicycle Race and nobody bothered to tell us, but
there were some good write-ups, but it was, like, multiple. It wasn't, like, one viral hit.
And you want it, and that's way better because then, you know, it's, like, if you're actually involved in a community, then they're not going to be disappointed when they get the book, because they know exactly what they're getting. They know exactly what they're invested in. They know, they could probably tell you more details about the author and the book than you could.
They trust you.
Yeah, and more to the point is, like, there's no delusion about what they're getting, you know.
And that book was available on Amazon, because it was before we broke up with them, and people still bought it from us.
Well, it wasn't on Amazon yet, because it was 6 months before pub.
Right, okay, you're right. That is the benefit also of printing the book.
What did you learn from the, like, what did this teach you about best practices? See, I'm Ellie now.
Well, what I learned about best practices from our recent spike in sales of making stuff and doing things is make sure that you have developed really good books and don't put them out of print just because they've started selling slow.
Mm-hmm.
Unless if they're evergreen, then you can keep them in print forever.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have control over the means of selling them, then you can always reap the benefits from that.
And we did do a 2017 edition of Making Stuff and Doing Things that was really just, like, we tightened up some, like, of the editing, and we cut, like, some of the more pointless content.
We gave it a new cover. It had a very 90s cover before.
The common wisdom in publishing is that then that gives, like, the opportunity to, like, place it in stores again. And that happened, but that did not sell anywhere near as many copies as this recent spate of us merely leaving a trail of breadcrumbs on a 20-year-old book that, you know, like, we just did the diligence of keeping in print and, like, having systems at the ready to ship copies when we suddenly got hundreds of orders one day.
It makes me really, I mean, ever since I started publishing, or really ever since I met you, Joe, you were like, 90% of this job is just answering the phone, and I feel like this is a great example. So you can work your butt off all day long, like, trying to do different things to promote your book and get people to review it and whatnot, and some amount of that is good, but in the end, you need to, like, work smarter to, like, add, as you say, breadcrumbs, to leave a trail of breadcrumbs that people can follow, rather than to kind of shove the book on everybody at once, and then people will end up coming to you.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you. This has been A People's Guide to Publishing, episode 40.
Episode 40.
I
40.
Am your host, Joe Beale, the autistic publisher and the author of A People's Guide to Publishing.
And I'm Ellie Blue. I come to work here every day.
And we'll see you next week.
Visit us at microcosmpublishing.com.
Thanks so much for joining us once again on People's Guide to Publishing, the podcast, episode 36. I am your host, Joe Beale, the autistic publisher.
I'm Ellie Blue, the editor who doesn't pay attention to commas.
And please send us your questions so we can answer them on future episodes. And please, please do give us those reviews on iTunes and everywhere else that podcasts are reviewed. 5 stars, if you please. And have a wonderful week.
Thank you. You can find us on the internet at microcosmpublishing.com or microcosm.pub if you want to keep it short and simple. You can also find us on Twitter at microcosm, on Facebook at microcosmpublishing, on Instagram at microcosm_pub, and here in Portland on North Williams Avenue.
Thank you so much.